back. Tex-Ax Radio presented by David Gardner's Jewelers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. Got Richard Zane with us to do a little baseball talk because yesterday we got to go out there to the media session. Got to had a nice conversation with Will Johnson. We got to talk with Coach Loss and Jace as well. Let's go straight to the hotline and check in with Coach Loss. How are you, sir? Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Thanks for joining us here this morning. So yesterday you gave us a little glimpse into what the rotation could look like this weekend. Just give us a little bit of your thoughts on what you've seen from Lankin this year and his growth.
Well, he's really been a super consistent, mature guy since he's been on campus. He threw a lot in high school, a lot of innings, which I think drove him down. You know, by the end of the year, his velocity wasn't what we had seen when we recruited him, and certainly what we see now. And so I think now that he's in a more consistent routine, and you know, he's always been a strike thrower and super competitive guy, mature beyond his years. He's the model of what you kind of like Prager was last year, the guy that can handle, you know, pitching in the biggest moments, as we've seen, like closing the game against Texas Tech and giving us big innings last week against LSU. So my only concern is that this college baseball season is really tough, especially on a freshman pitcher. So just want to be careful with him, but we don't really have any choice. And when you don't have many choices, you don't have many problems. That's what Coach Box likes to tell me. So we'll run him out there this weekend, and I'm sure he's going to do great.
Coach, to make that move, obviously you have to take Chris Cortez out of the rotation. So I'm curious, what was that conversation like with him? How has Chris taken it? And what do you see his role as moving forward coming out of the bullpen?
Yeah, well, first of all, the conversation went great. I think Chris is a really self-aware guy. He's a team guy. He's a future leader in this program. He leads in his own way right now. I just said, hey, we have a chance to get a little bit better in the rotation and get better in the bullpen. And I've had a lot of current major league pitchers or future major league pitchers that scuffled a little bit in a starting role. We put them in the bullpen to give them a chance to A, help the team, and B, help themselves kind of clear their mind and pitch from a different role for a while, and then sometimes go right back in the rotation if they do well. So I just told them, you know, this is the move we're going to make for now. Again, it makes us better in two areas, but also I'm not closing the door to him as a starting pitcher, whether it be this year or over time. And he knows what he has to do to be a successful starting pitcher, or just to be a successful pitcher in general. I mean, you still got to be able to throw multiple pitches for strikes. And so the conversation went great. Chris is a great teammate, and we love him to death.
I found it fascinating. I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard. Oh,
Coach, I know you've been looking for impact right-handers, so what kind of weapon does Cortez provide you in that back into the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as good or better than what we have. I mean, Hogan's made some pitches in moments. Rudess has made some pitches in moments, but nobody has the pure stuff that Cortez has, so at least it changes the look with his fastball. He had success somewhat in that role last year without a better breaking pitch. His breaking pitches aren't as consistent as he or we would like them, but maybe in a shorter role now that, you know, part of starting was to be able to give him time to develop his pitches. So according to Coach Yeske, he threw an awesome bullpen yesterday, and so maybe we'll strike gold here with it this weekend.
Schloss, yesterday you made the comparison to the free base battle to turnovers in football. If you can just kind of illustrate that a little bit more, because I was surprised when you gave some of the numbers of how your team has done over the last year.
Yeah, so it's just simply a free base is, you know, it's so valuable in baseball. And so if there's a, you know, if you walk the leadoff hitter, that's one free base. If there's runners on first and second and you walk the guy, that's three free bases, right? Because everybody moves up one. So, you know, you have free base on a error, free base on a walk, free base on a hit by pitch, free base on a throwing the ball to the wrong base and allowing a guy an extra base. So last year, so we keep track of all that. It's just simply a plus minus, and we keep track of it on a big grease board in the locker room so everybody sees it. And last year, I think we were 34-8, somewhere around there, 34-8 when we won the freebase war. I think we were 8-12 when we lost it. And then whatever is left, whatever our record was, 44-20. Yeah, so I think we were maybe 2-0 or something when it was even, something like that. And in the last four games, until Tuesday night against Rice, we had lost the free base war in four consecutive games, but we had won two of those games. So, in other words, we got a little lucky. The other team didn't have as many timely hits, but you can't win that. That's not how you're going to win long term. So, obviously, Saturday was the example of that. We just practically gave a game away for the most part. So, very frustrating, but it's something we talk about every day and plan on it being better this weekend.
Coach, obviously, y'all are headed to Knoxville for this weekend series. And last year, Tennessee was kind of known as the bad boys of college baseball, had really gaudy offensive statistics, a little bit different of a look from the Volunteers this year. In your preparation, what have you seen from them offensively, and just how dangerous are they without a number of the big names they had last year?
Yeah, they're still dangerous, and they're obviously really motivated after this past weekend. And getting their first SEC series at home now this weekend. And I haven't been to Lindsey Nelson Stadium since a regional in 1993, which is a long time ago. Todd Helton was a freshman then on that team. And so apparently the ballpark's changed a lot. They brought the fences way in. So I think Tennessee is super athletic, right and left-handed hitters, 46 homers. I think we have 19. Something like that. So, you know, very potent offensive team, can run, elite starting pitching. So we're going to have to play our best to hang with them.
Talking with Jim Sosnagle here on Texags Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers. Can you give us a little bit of an update on Austin Bose? I know he went through practice yesterday. You wanted to see how he felt. How are things trending for him?
All good. Yeah, 100%. He actually wanted live at-bats in the simulated games, which we normally reserve those at-bats for the guys who aren't getting as many at-bats during the season, I mean, during the games. And Austin called and said, "I feel great. I want to hit off of, you know, the pitchers who haven't pitched much, you know." And so he got about four or five at-bats yesterday, did well. And Werner moving around okay. Minnick, I think, starts to hit. He'll travel with us this weekend, but not be on the 27-man roster, so he can continue his progression. So that was certainly scary the other night. But maybe, you know, this time next week, something like that, maybe we'll have our full complement of players back. But it changes every day. You never know what can happen.
I'm surprised that Todd Helton, the career 316 hitter in the big league, still isn't in the Hall of Fame after five ballots. But switching gears, Coach, Chase Dolander this weekend. You saw Paul Skeens last weekend. Just how good is Dolander, and how is he different from the Friday night ace you saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, all the right-handers for Tennessee are super talented, big arms, you know, low to mid-90s. Some better. Chase Burns better than that at times. The difference is they use their breaking balls a lot more than Skeens. You know, Skeens used his as needed, but, you know, 98 to 101 for six or seven innings, whatever it was, and he was not going to see that very much. So, but these guys, you know, these right-handers are all really talented. They were all a big part of a historic season for Tennessee last year. But, you know, I mean, if we, and it's not, they're really good, but they're not anything we haven't seen. Certainly, I mean, Skeens is as good or better, so we've seen that. So we're just going to have to get him in the strike zone, and you got to be on time for a fastball, because you can't be prepared to hit the fastball and try to handle the great breaking ball, and you have to just hit the hanging breaking ball. So we'll just fight with him.
Schloss, obviously, it was great to see Trevor Werner back out there. Bronny mentioned how good he looked at the plate beyond just the home run, his approach. What did you like?
Yeah, I thought he stayed on the ball. He just missed the ball, a ball he hit just barely off the handle of the bat to center field that had a chance to go out. I thought he had the opportunity when he had, you know, he had some chances to run, and he didn't. I think he was a little hesitant, which is fine. When he came, but coming out of the game, I think he felt pretty good. And yesterday, he was moving around well. So I thought the quality of his at-bats were good, and we're going to need him to get it going. Him, Targhees made some good adjustments yesterday. Jason Lavalette made a huge adjustment over, you know, Monday, Tuesday with Coach Early, changed a lot in his setup and swing stance, and saw and got two hits, including the home run on Tuesday. So hopefully those guys start to feel more confident and can give us more.
I know you mentioned yesterday you hadn't been to Knoxville since 1993, but added fun for you. You're going to get to see your son who lives close by, right?
Yeah, he lives in Nashville. I'm going to get to see him. He's going to come over tomorrow and catch a couple ball games. And I have some family coming in from Western Maryland, since Knoxville and Lexington are the two closest SEC places. So I'm looking forward to this trip.
Schloss, we appreciate your time, sir. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a great day. See you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Coach.
Jim Schlossnagel here on Texags Radio. Did I just cut him off? I think I just cut him off. I didn't mean to. If I did,
I mean, that's, you're gonna have to answer for that one.
Yeah, well, that one I didn't mean to. You know what? I'm gonna blame it on Nick. It's just easier that
fair.
Way.
Did you know Todd Helton played quarterback at Tennessee too?
I did not know that.
Wow, what a guy.
Yeah. You were mentioning to me before, and a little bit maybe. No, it was before the segment that you look at Tennessee and after playing LSU as good as they can be and have been. You weren't as impressed as you thought you might be.
No, that was just looking at the numbers, right?
Right, just the numbers, yes.
And that's probably a little skewed because of who A&M just faced. Like, LSU's numbers, if you looked at their statistics coming into last weekend, they were ridiculous. Like, Dylan Cruz is batting over 500 coming in, ridiculous. And the highest guy on Tennessee's lineup is hitting 354, which is very impressive. Much better than I could do. It's just kind of like, if you're comparing apples to oranges, you're comparing the number one team in the country to the number 12 team in the country. Tennessee's still fantastic, and you heard Coach Schlossnagel say it. They were preseason number two for a reason.
Sure.
So A&M's going to have their hands full. I just didn't expect the numbers to look like that after just one SEC weekend.
Yeah.
And Nick reminded me their pitching stats are fantastic, much better than their offensive numbers.
This series, we know how big it is for A&M, but I keep telling people, like, it is even bigger for Tennessee, considering they have not faced LSU yet.
And I don't know if they have to face LSU this season.
Do they face them next
week? I haven't
week?
Looked at their schedule. You might be right.
I think they
face them. Yeah, you are right. Yeah. And they got to go to Alex Box, so that's not fun. But every weekend in the Southeastern Conference is huge, and you just got to avoid getting swept like A&M did last Sunday and like Tennessee couldn't last weekend against Missouri.
And I think that's my point is you could be two series in, three series in and have such a hole to make up. Like you and then, you know, A&M's got this one. And then they got Ole Miss. Then they had a little bit of, again, they're all going to be hard.
Yeah.
But a little bit of a breather compared to the, doesn't mean you're going to win every series. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you're taking on the preseason and early season 1, 2, and 3, like, it's, you could fall in a huge hole.
Well, here's your first five. You got to play LSU, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and then you got to face a team that was in Omaha last year in Auburn, and then Missouri at home, who just swept the number two team in the country. So, like, there's not really too much rest for the weary, but you just got to take it week by week and not let last week impact this week.
Richard, thank you, brother.
Of course.
All right, right now we're talking Caprock Health System, highly personalized emergency care. If you're in an emergency-like situation, you need to make sure that you reach out and go to Caprock Health System because their patients benefit from a very unique one-on-one experience. Should your stay require for you to be there a little bit longer than you want, and I know you want to get out of there as quickly as possible, and they're trying to get you out of there as quickly as possible, but if you are going to be there longer, they're going to manage every element of your stay. They have a very low doctor-to-nurse ratio to patient ratio because they want to know everything about your medical needs, and when you need it, they're going to be there for you. It's a great place to go when you're in that kind of situation because they put the patient first in every decision that they make, 100% locally owned and operated in the Brazos Valley, putting the patient first in all those decisions. They got two state-of-the-art locations designed for patient healing and family friendliness. You've got Caprock Hospital in Bryan and Caprock 24-hour Emergency Center in College Station. They both have zero wait time for emergency care, so you'll never have to sit in a crowded waiting room. It is Caprock Hospital in Bryan and Caprock 24-hour Emergency Center in College Station. the what-ifs that you think about during a sports season. We had a couple what-ifs during football, more than a couple. You had it in basketball, and you're already having a little bit in baseball. Texax Radio, presented by David Gardner-Schulers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. That second game of the LSU series is one that we were talking about during one of the breaks, how that one could have gone A&M's way. And Schloss just said it right there for himself. He said, you know, we gave that one away, and that is certainly the case. The free bases, I like the way Schloss explained all that. It's when you're taking on in the Southeastern Conference with all these great teams that are in it, when you take on these high-quality teams, you cannot give free bases, and unfortunately they did. And I know that's why they're making a change to the rotation, not just for the free bases, but they've got to figure out that rotation, and Lampkin has certainly earned that spot. Anything pitching-wise, Nick, that caught your attention over the weekend and what you expect to see?
Well, I mean, not so much over the weekend, but, I mean, I didn't touch on Cortez moving to the bullpen earlier, but just the fact that you can now go, you know, you'd think you'd go Cortez into Johnston, and you have those two guys on the back end who can go multiple innings, not just one inning, you know, and like Major League Baseball, you think a guy for the eighth, guy for the ninth. Well, these guys can go six, seven, or, you know, a couple innings at a time and really just kind of bridge the gap. And not only that helps the bullpen for the entire weekend whenever they're getting deep into these series, deep into the SEC season, but I just think they're proven guys, and I really like that mix at the back end with Cortez and Johnston.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think sometimes you just need a different role to get your mind right. And I always bring up my kids as an example, but
you know what's a good example of that?
What's that?
Wade Taylor at the beginning of the season, he came off the bench a couple times. Buzz kind of just mixed up that, you know, mix for him, and look what it did for him. He exploded this season into a true leader, and you know, looked great at the end of the season. So maybe it's hope, you know, you're hoping for something like that to happen for Cortez, and like you said, maybe he finds his way back into the rotation this year, or this will just catapult him into next season, and maybe he is getting into that starting rotation, and he's very strong.
I really enjoyed talking to Will Johnston yesterday. We'll run that interview at around 10:05 or so. Just a very cerebral young man, very polite, and he's got great stuff. I'm looking, you know, obviously he had a little mishap against Rice, but Ronnie wanted me to make sure when I talk to him to kind of focus a little bit on going from that LSU series, which was such a pressure point for this program and for this team this season, to, you know, having a little bit of rest and then bam, you're back at it. And we did talk about that. But you look at what he's done, and Nick, you had some stats. I'm just looking at the game by game. I don't know if you have some of those stats still in front of you. But you look at what he did against LSU, those three innings, only giving up that one run. You look at what he did against Houston, what he did against Northern Kentucky. This goes back quite a while. I'm trying to think of this. Go back all the way to the Houston Christian game of just really dominance out there. And even in that game, he had the three strikeouts, one innings pitch, didn't give up a run. So it goes back to the Portland game.
Yeah, I mean, he's carrying a 1.33 ERA on the season, which is, you know, amazing. You want that. But, I mean, I was really focusing in on his last two starts just because that's kind of what he's going to be focusing on coming into Sunday. But like I said, his last two starts, nine innings combined through those two, allowed six hits, only one run, and 11 strikeouts through that stretch there. But again, that was against Rice, and that was against Houston. So going to get a little trial by fire with Tennessee because, you know, obviously competition level is raised. But maybe not the same Tennessee team we saw last year when it comes to their offensive statistics.
Yeah, look. Go there, take care of business, win the series, survive in advance, and get ready for Texas. You know, that's the bottom line. Is you have to. This is I find both, not only A&M but more Tennessee, vulnerable at this point. So you got to jump on it and make sure that you're able to take care of business there on the road, because there's a lot of baseball still to be played.
Yeah.
You were gonna say something, Nick?
Yeah. I'll just and Cole, could you throw up the SEC schedule? Well, I looked at it, you know, earlier this morning when I was making this graphic, and there's more ranked teams on that schedule now, by the way, Missouri's into the rankings. Yep. Kentucky's into the rankings. Arkansas and Florida have both moved up in the rankings. So, you know, Tennessee and Ole Miss have fallen, obviously, but it doesn't get any easier. Those are still two very, very impressive squads. And, I think this weekend, you know, come May, we're going to look back and see how they fare against Tennessee and Ole Miss here and say, you know, did they find the right lineup? Did this rotation pay off? And, you know, obviously we're hoping it does for another deep trip into the playoffs.
Well, it feels like they dodged the bullet there with Austin Bose. They got Trevor Warner back. Brett Minnick could be back next week. Like, could be back by the Ole Miss series. That's what Schloss even said. He said that Ole Miss series would be roughly around 6 weeks from the injury. So, remember the reports coming out of the early part of their camp was how big and strong and good he was looking. You know, obviously it'll take a little time for him to feel comfortable and going and whatnot. But to me, that is you get what you expected to be your lineup back, right? For the majority of this SEC play, it could be fun to watch. All right, let's hit a break here. When we come back, Aaron Torres. We really haven't talked NCAA tournament, so I'm sure we will do a little bit of that with Aaron because there are some things in the tournament that I want to get into with him, plus Rick Pitino, and I'm just curious how this Texas Xavier game goes. But right now, we are talking Heritage Films. That's Chance McClain's company. The website is yourheritagefilm.com. They make documentary films about you, your dad, your mom, your uncle, your family business. How about that? Like, imagine Billy doing a Heritage Films on just how he and Brandon and the crew and Josh and Hunter kind of came together and created the Avengers of Texas A&M media, right? Like the way they did that with Texags. That'd be a kind of a cool story that I would be all about watching. It could be whatever your family business is or about your family ranch. You know, it's been passed down from generation to generation. It could be at an Easter event, right? You have all the cameras there and you've got your family and the little kids running around and they take chunks of that and put it onto this documentary and they do interviews while Granny's there and your cousin Billy's there who was arrested last month, but he's back. He's hanging out with the family. Whatever it may be, Chance can do that story for you. And then you've got a video for not only the rest of your life, the rest of time, right? A video that you can hear from the sources, from the people of how life was, how the family was started, and all the great relationships in between. It is yourheritagefilm.com, yourheritagefilm.com, 713-893-8341, 713-893-8341. And we're back. Lil Jon for you. I'm sure Aaron Torres was jamming this back in the day, Texags Radio. Presented by David Gardner's Jewelers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. Let's go to that hotline. AT, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Well, good. You know, you were rubbing elbows and kissing babies with all the important people in Des Moines, Iowa last week, so I didn't talk with you, but I'm good. That Lil Jon song reminds me of it came out during my college years, and, of course, my alma mater plays tonight, so... is that a sign? Is that an omen from the Texags board op that UConn's winning tonight? Is that what you're trying to tell me, David?
I think we are. I think we are, buddy. I think we're rooting for our buddy Hassan Diarra over there. How's he playing for you all?
That's true. I'll be honest. Not well. I wouldn't say well. Well is not the word I would use. So UConn actually struggled in the middle of the season. They were really good early, and then early January, I think they lost like 6 of 8 or 5 of 7 or something like that. And my biggest complaint, and I watch every game, is I thought they needed to shorten the rotation. And not to bore people, but in college basketball, you really only need to play 7, maybe 8 guys unless there's crazy foul trouble. And I thought he was one of the guys that was playing way too much. And it's no disrespect. But it's just one, you know, UConn has NBA talent that wasn't playing as much as it should. But two, I also, you know, it's basketball 101, right? We've all played basketball at some level. And, you know, even if it's in gym class or at the Y, you know, you get into a rhythm with certain guys or girls and you want to keep playing with them. And then the coach keeps subbing them out. So I actually think Dan Hurley shortening the rotation over the last couple of weeks, including limiting Diarra's minutes, has actually helped the team. But it's not to say that he won't be a contributor. He's still got some eligibility left. They're actually going to need him next year. They're going to lose a lot of players. But this year, he's kind of, to say he's been lost in the shuffle might be a slight understatement.
All right, so we've moved on from the loss to Penn State,
yeah.
But I just want you to give me your opinion of Texas A&M, the future of this basketball program, also considering that a bulk of this team outside of Dexter Dennis could be back next year. Could. I say could because you never know in this world of college basketball.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because I haven't really started looking ahead yet on what next season's rosters could look like, but it was a thought that I had after Texas A&M lost was, you know, I know some of the guys have eligibility left, and Buzz has historically done a good job of retaining the guys that he wants. But, you know, I didn't know who was really going to be back and who was it, like Julius Marble, right? It feels like he's been around forever, but with the COVID rules and everything, does he have an extra year of eligibility? And so I bring it up to say, I would say this, on the season itself, I think this was the year where the corner was turned. Rebuilds, the way that Buzz does them, takes time. You know, it's not going to be a 1 year we're going to flip our entire roster through the transfer portal. He wants to build with you know, we know the term, the OKGs. He wants to build with those guys. And, yes, you're going to use the portal in 2023 to supplement and to find pieces and stuff like that. But it's not going to be a one-year deal. And so, you know, obviously year one was incredible. Then year two, COVID happens, and I think it reset everything. And then they finally started to figure it out at the end of last year. And I think this year is really where I think everything has been established. And so, like you said, David, I do think, obviously, you're going to lose some players beyond Dexter Dennis. We don't know exactly what the roster is going to look like. But I think now, you know, the culture of work, of how we're going to do this, how practice is going to look, everybody understands it, right? There's no holdovers. Everybody committed to Buzz on some level. And you'll have the guys in the program that have had success and have done it the way that Buzz expects it to be done. So I really like where this program is at heading into the future. Obviously a disappointing way to end it last week, but I think overall you got to be excited about what the future looks like for this group.
I saw that you were tweeting about Rick Pitino already killing it on the recruiting side of things. Just talk to me about the Pitino New York effect and what their future at St. John's could look like.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if because growing up in Connecticut, you know, the Northeast basketball thing matters to me more than most people. I'm sure that it does. But, you know, New York City, I don't think people – New York City is a basketball town. Like, there's a reason that every time the Knicks go on a three-game winning streak, it's like a national story. It's like people really care. And so, you know, I'm one of those people that, you know, I want as many marquee programs to be as good as possible. And I think it'll be great for college basketball to have a marquee program at its highest level in the media capital of the world. You know, Mike Anderson, who was the previous coach, he had been at Arkansas forever. You know, I saw some of his press conferences this year, and I mean, it literally looked like David, a high school game. I mean, I guarantee you there's more people covering Texas, you know, high school football and basketball than some of these St. John's games. So I'm excited. And the one thing I will say is, you know, it appears as though he knows this is his last shot at the big time and he's going out with a bang. Yesterday was his first day on the job, and I'm pretty sure he offered like every five-star high school basketball player in America. And he's obviously not going to get all of them, but I think it's a testament to the fact of like, you know, he's like, I'm coming in and we're doing this big and we're trying to win at the highest level. So again, I don't know how much it resonates in Aggieland, but I think obviously, you know, having a marquee name in the biggest in the only college basketball presence, really the only college sports presence in the New York City area, I think is going to be great for college sports and great for college basketball as a whole.
I will tell you, it's I don't know if what the right word is. It's not bittersweet, but it's weird seeing Arkansas, Tennessee, and Alabama, as expected, all still playing. All teams that A&M beat this past season, but also cool to see the SEC representing.
Yeah. And I was wondering about that from your guys' perspective. You know, listen, I think what this speaks to, David, and it's something I know that I've talked about for years, and I'm sure you and I have talked about it at some point, it's the commitment that this league made about 7-8 years ago when the SEC Network first came about to having a good basketball product. We know the history of SEC basketball. We don't have to repeat it. But when Texas A&M came into this league and they started the SEC Network, you know, Mike Sly famously told all his ADs, hey, we have a lot of programming to fill in the winter months, and I can't have two NCAA tournament teams or Kentucky and everybody else. And you look at the commitment that these schools have made. You know, Arkansas bringing in Musselman, Rick Barnes. I know he's had his shortcomings in the tournament, but is a very accomplished head coach. Obviously, Bruce Pearl, Buzz Williams is a perfect example of all this. And I think we're seeing the effects on it. Now, I'll also say this. For people who do love college basketball, I think we're also seeing the reverse effect somewhere else where you look at the ACC, Duke first-year head coach out of the tournament. North Carolina, second-year head coach, didn't make the tournament. Syracuse now is going into a first-year head coaching situation. Louisville, first-year head coach, didn't make the tournament. It's like, you know, I will say, like, I do think, you know, you have to put your money where your mouth is in college sports. And you know, we've talked about it from the football perspective a million times. But from the basketball perspective, you know, the SEC has made a conscious commitment as a league across the board to commit to this sport. And I'll tell you this, David, I don't just think it's the NCAA tournament. You know, watching games this year and seeing Reed Arena pack, seeing what Bud Walton has become again, seeing what Knoxville is like for a big game, seeing even some of these other programs arrive this year, Mississippi State, Missouri, how great those crowds have been. Again, I think it's a league-wide effort and a league-wide commitment. And I give credit so much to Mike Slive originally and obviously Greg Sankey for helping see it through. But that is the effect of you put money into stuff, you're going to get good results.
What do you think about this Arkansas run? A team that's had the talent all year long. We've known it. We've talked about lottery picks and, you know, how good they can be. They're starting to put it together, man. And you saw it against a wounded Kansas team, but a one-seed Kansas team.
Well, and that's where I have trouble with tonight's game is, you know, and I obviously look, I obviously know both these teams well. I watch every UConn game. Arkansas, I go on in Fayetteville every week, so I'm always – and I know Muss. I've known Muss forever. So I'm always monitoring what they do. But I'm torn because, one, he's got this incredible March track record. It speaks for itself. But your point, David, is one that I think is kind of easily being glossed over because, like, the Arkansas narrative is awesome, which is that, you know, Kansas did not have a Hall of Fame head coach on the sideline when they took the court against Arkansas, and Arkansas won by 1 point. And so you wonder if Bill Self is there, is Kansas one basket better, and is Arkansas out in the second round? But with that said, Bill Self was not there. We have to credit Arkansas. And I will say, I actually think, again, knowing UConn as well as I do, there are some very advantageous matchups for Arkansas in this game, and it speaks to what you just said. This was a team that was a preseason top 10 team, three McDonald's All-Americans. They crushed it in the transfer portal, and it took a while, but I do think that talent is starting to come together for the Razorbacks. So it's going to be fascinating. I will tell you this. I think this is by far the most intriguing game tonight. I think this is by far – I think it's going to be the highest level game. UCLA and Gonzaga is probably going to be pretty good too. But, you know, I just think you're going to see NBA bodies. You're going to see obviously an NBA caliber coach in Eric Musselman who came from the NBA. I as unbiased observers at Aggieland, or maybe you are biased because of the Arkansas ties, I just think it's going to be an awesome game. I think it's going to be a fun watch for you guys.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We're talking to Aaron Torres here on Texags Radio. Check out his podcast, Aaron Torres Online, and of course you can find him on Fox Sports Radio. So another issue that I have is this Texas Xavier game. The Penn State matchup aside, I thought A&M would have matched up well with Texas, and I saw how Texas attacked Penn State, and I was a little jealous. And you know the rivalry with Texas right down the road. But Xavier's the same team that beat A&M on the last few seconds. They're in the NIT final. These two teams are going at it tomorrow. Your thoughts on how that game could go?
That's the one I really don't have like a huge – I don't have an opinion on it. Like, you know, we always talk about like, you know, if I was in Vegas, like I wouldn't bet my money on this. And I'll tell you why. It's because, you know, when Chris Beard was fired, the team still played well, Texas. But, you know, Chris Beard's identity as a coach is on defense, and the defense got pretty lackadaisical, you know, for probably about, you know, 6 weeks after he left, and they were just winning these high-scoring games, and they were still winning, but they, you know, whatever. Why I bring it up is the last five or six games, they have really clamped down on defense. I mean, you mentioned Penn State. I think Penn State ended up scoring like 56 points or something like that in that game against Texas in the round of 32. And so I bring it up because Xavier is an elite offensive team, And if this was the Texas of like 3 weeks ago, I think Texas would actually be in trouble, even though they're the higher seeded team and they're the favorites in Vegas. But they have made that commitment on defense, or at least it appears as though they've made a commitment on defense. And that's why I'm so torn on this game is, you know, I think that there's that, that, you know, Sean Miller, they probably, you know, Xavier probably has the coaching advantage, all of that. But Texas, obviously, I would say has the talent advantage. But what also stands out is the obvious with Texas is that it's a veteran group that is playing for Rodney Terry. Like, I don't know if Rodney Terry's going to be the guy. I don't know if he's the right guy. I don't know if he's the wrong guy. What I can tell by watching that team is that those guys love that dude, and they want to win for him so that they give Texas no decision but to give him that head coaching job. So, again, I don't think that necessarily means that you're going to win just because you want to win. Everybody wants to win at this stage. But that's obviously the underlying story. I'll be curious to see how it plays out. I think you can argue that, well, I know I just said Arkansas, UConn's the most fascinating or the highest level game. I think from a narrative perspective, that's the one I have no idea what to expect. And I think the narratives are going to be really good in that one. And let me say one other thing. I agree with you 1,000%. I actually think A&M matched up very well with Texas. And that's what sucks about this tournament sometimes is if you can just get through one game, you can kind of see the bracket opening up. And it happens to everybody. It's not just A&M. But I agree with you 1,000%. I actually thought they matched up very well with Texas in that game.
Talking to Aaron Torres here on Texas Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers. Aaron, let me ask you, because it is – I just find it interesting. I brought it up a couple different times this week on the show, the Nate Oates, the Nick Saban commentary, which was, to me, directed at Nate Oates. And then yesterday he shows up at practice shaking hands. what'd you make of that whole thing, just the way he polices his team, at least during the offseason – because during their season, I think we might see a different Nick Saban.
Okay, so this is my stance on that whole situation. And you know, I actually somehow missed those quotes in real time. It's just, you know, we get busy, whatever. You're not on social media. Why I bring it up? So this is what I've been told about Nick Saban for years, David Nunez, okay? What I've been told about Nick Saban, nobody uses the media to deliver messages better than Nick Saban. That was what I've been told about him. I've also been told that nobody hates distractions more than Nick Saban. Nobody is better at putting blinders on and keeping the main thing than Nick Saban. So if I'm led to believe that nobody uses the media better than Nick Saban and he hates distractions, and I would argue that an international controversy, and it is at this point on his campus, I would argue that's a distraction, David. I don't think you can argue that it was coincidental, you can because Alabama is arguing it. I don't think a smart person can think that it was totally accidental. Here's the other thing about it too, David. I don't think a lot of people realize this. It was a pre-prepared statement from Nick Saban on the status of Tony Mitchell. It was not an off-the-cuff answer to a question. It was pre-prepared. So you mean to tell me he had time to think about what he was going to say? And he happened to coincidentally use the phrase wrong place, wrong time. I don't buy it. I think he was delivering a message. I don't think he's happy. This has brought a lot of negative attention to the university. It's brought a lot of eyeballs to the university. And that is a distraction to Nick Saban. My guess is that he's not happy about it. Even though he showed up for the photo op yesterday, I can't imagine that he's happy about it. And I don't think that that was coincidental at all.
AT, anything on AT Online we need to tell the people about?
Yeah, you know, I got my picks for all the games. You know, the podcast has been rolling this week. It's a lot of college hoops. You know, I'll get back to the football stuff. By the way, I need to ask you at some point about, is there anything to make of that Jimbo Fisher comment the other day about the play calling? I know we probably don't have time today. But, yeah, no, my picks, you know, all that good stuff, the Aaron Torres pod, make sure you listen. I'll be in Houston next week. Maybe I'll be in Aggieland, TBA. But, no, I'm just excited we get games again tonight. I should be at the UConn game, but I have a personal obligation to a friend, wedding, all that stuff. So I won't be there, but that's really it. That's what's going on in AT's world right now. So
we appreciate you, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, David. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Later, man. Aaron Torres from Aaron Torres Online and Fox Sports Radio. All right, we'll hit a break. We'll come back with one final segment here in the second hour, then third hour, rolling Texas Radio.
I'm ready.
Oh, gosh. You folks on the chat always got me laughing. Texas Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. As you all know, we do the show multiple different ways. We've got TexAgs.com. We've got The Zone, AM 1150, right, where people can listen to us digitally online, right, or they can listen to us terrestrial radio. We've got our friends at KBTX. We're on the CW there, right, for the first 2 hours of the show. We're on YouTube. Am I missing any other ones, Emily? That's all of them, right?
I think that's all of them.
Well, I mean, and then you got the Spotify, and you got, like, you know, Apple Podcasts and all the other stuff.
And on the TexAg site, can't forget about that.
TexAgs.com. Yeah, that is the mothership, right? Multiple different ways. So sometimes I have a hard time, like, keeping up with, you know, because I try to real-time chat with people when they text the A&B text line, or and there's always a guy from another university that loves to come in here and chit-chat, and it just makes me laugh that we matter so much to folks that they take time out of their day to go to our site, help our algorithm, help our numbers, and our NIL fund, because every time they interact with us, a little bit goes to our NIL fund. Every time, to just go on there and talk about their university, I thank them for doing that. To me, it's like, wow, that is so kind of you to take time out of your busy day to go to an opposing fan site, a show, and talk about you. I love it. I really love that. Nick, I know that you're all about it too.
Yeah, you're very interactive on the YouTube page, and I will say the...
TexAgs.com too.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just more so saying about with the trolls, I guess you want to call them. The messages are always pretty fun to keep up with on the YouTube page.
Well, people are like, you're giving them what they want. Okay. They're giving me what I want. Interactions. Helps the numbers.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, it helps the algorithm. I'm all about it. Like, I want everybody, Kenny, all you folks, right, to just keep, like, I remember, like, at church, they always tell you, whatever you put into your mind, like, it can poison your mind. It can also make you a better person. So if you listen to positive messages, it makes you a more positive person. All these other universities that don't have such a positive reputation, if you just want to soak in a little A&M, by all means, it'll make you a better person. I'm okay with that. I know life must be hard over there, like, especially if you had to live there and always have to worry about, like, getting robbed. I get it. This is a great community. If you want to hear me spit, like, some positive A&M vibe, but join us. You could talk about your little school. That's fine.
Are you going to spit some A&M bars?
I'll spit some bars. I like it. It's good for the show. It's good for the algorithm. It's good for the soul. And look, they just want a little attention. There's no other reason to go on another site unless you need help. You need friends that you don't have in your real life. I get it. I'm here for you. Don't feel like a loser. Don't. You're going to, but don't feel that way. All right, when we come back on TexAgs Radio, we'll run that interview with Will Johnston. Looking forward to that. We'll talk to the A&M rugby team, a couple players coming in. They got a big game this upcoming weekend. The Fan Show, watch out. Got Kelly and Matt coming in. It's that and more TexAgs Radio.